What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Power Time Watchers podcast with Keith and Lorcan, where we talk about everything in the world of pop culture, movie news, TV shows, video games, comic books, you name it. And do you know what, Lorcan? We might just talk about it sometimes. Maybe part time. Who knows? But we will be talking about some random stuff. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm sure some people might know, because I'm not sure where our audience actually live, but we are currently back in quarantine again.
In lockdown. We are. Dublin's in a bit of a mini lockdown. Whoop, whoop.
Oh, yeah. Gotta love that. And then immediately after the news was announced as well, a couple of people decided to have a giant drug-filled party in the middle of Dublin last night as well. So, you know, this is all good. You know, this is signs that we're going to recover and that people are on board with this lockdown, and everything will be okay in 3 weeks. Totally. We're not going to be locked back in. Do you know what, Keith? I'm glad we just saw Tenet in the cinema before it all went to shit again. it opened back up so you could see Tenet in the cinema, and then it closed back down again, and we'll never get to go to cinemas ever again. Even though we actually didn't even talk about it. Sorry, I'm going off on a tangent. We didn't even go and talk about it. But the X-Men film.
New Mutants. Yeah, I still haven't seen it.
That's in cinema at the minute, and was in cinema while I was watching Tenet, and I still goes, oh, do you know what? I'm not even going to bother. I'm not going to go. So, like, that film is in cinemas, and I haven't heard anyone talk about it, haven't seen any reviews of it, haven't seen anyone leak any information about it. So that movie is just dying a slow death in cinemas at the moment. How much of a damning indictment was that? Like...
Yeah, it really it didn't get any attention. It got I've seen a couple of reviews come out at the time, and everyone just kind of said it was meh, and then it was just totally forgotten about. So, yeah, that's a shame. We really got to stop opening on like lockdown though. Every time we have an episode, it's like, "How are you doing?"
It's lockdown. It's like,
well, lockdown or not lockdown, or we're out of lockdown, or we're back in lockdown.
It's really hard to not think about anything else in the middle of a global pandemic when I thought we were doing so well for so far, and I was taking a piss out of other countries, namely America. Doing both, we'll see. Anyway, let's stop talking about coronavirus and let's
You're
talk
the one
ahead.
Doing it, it's not you're the one that goes into this every time.
Sure, whatever.
Oh, god damn it. Anyway, welcome to the show, everyone. Let's stop talking about that thing that no one wants to talk about anymore. And let's talk about some fun stuff in the world. There's no fun stuff in the world. Everything's terrible. Just kidding. We have some...
But kind of.
It's kind of terrible. It's kind of falling apart. You know, who knows?
At least we have news.
Kind of nice. We do. We have news. We actually have a lot of stuff. So obviously we didn't do an episode last week. We're thinking we might go back to 2 weeks because there's just not a lot of stuff happening right now. Because every time there was about to be movies, we were about to get back into swing of things. And then everyone kind of went into lockdown. Tenant didn't make money. Everyone's kind of freaking out in Hollywood. So there's not a whole pile of movies coming out to talk about. So we're not going to be... We might just go to 2 weeks until... Every 2 weeks until some more stuff starts coming out. But this week, we had a lot of stuff. We're going to be getting into... Xbox are making big moves. We have some Marvel news. We have some trailers, some casting. And then the two main things we'll be talking about, obviously the PS5 had their event last week, so we're going to be covering that. And then also, the Emmys were last night. And there was a lot to talk about, not in terms of the Emmys, because who gives a shit who gets awards, but one of the things that comes from talking about it is talking about a lot of shows that we do love. We will be getting into that in a little bit. But for now, Lorcan, let's talk about our competitor. We're PlayStation 5 fans.
Yes.
We are. To the bone. And we're actually totally... Like, we have both played PlayStation, but we don't give a shit. Like, we want both.
I've never owned an Xbox. And I've never had the drive to own an Xbox. Like, the only time I've ever thought about it was when the 360 came out and everyone was playing Halo online. But even then, I'm like, I'm not even the biggest fan of first-person shooters either. So, like, you know, I'm kind of good with not being on that. However... They've done it, Keith. They've taken my beloved Bethesda away from me.
Oh no.
and now I might need to consider getting an Xbox to play broken games by Bethesda that I can give out about, but I can't live without.
Exactly. So the big news just dropping hot off the press. We're probably the first podcast in the world to even talk about it. So don't even check anywhere else. We definitely are. But it just came out that Microsoft and Xbox are looking into buying the company that own Bethesda. Bethesda Games obviously are the company that have done the Elder Scrolls games. They've done Doom, they've done Fallout, they've done Wolfenstein. A lot of huge games that have huge fan bases. And all of those games have been multi-platform, like on PlayStation, Xbox, PC, all that kind of thing. But now Xbox are buying that company for about $7.5 billion, which is absolutely ludicrous. And it's actually going to turn out to be one of the biggest studio
acquisitions.
Biggest studio acquisitions in gaming, and in particular for Microsoft, it's the biggest gaming acquisition that they've ever made.
Someone was joking that they had this money set aside to buy TikTok when that whole thing was happening, and then that TikTok thing fell through, and now that's a deal with like Oracle or something like that now. But they just had this money on the table and go, what are we going to buy, boys? And they buy
what do we got? Where are we going next?
But the thing I should point out is it's not necessarily Bethesda that's done all those games. They've done the Fallout and they've done Elder Scrolls, but I think Doom and I think Doom and Wolfenstein are done by two other studios that are also owned by the studios that own Bethesda. I can't think of the name of the major one, but they're all kind of under that umbrella. And the thing to point out is that there's two other games that were supposed to be PlayStation exclusives, one being Ghostwire Tokyo. Yeah, Ghostwire Tokyo and Deathloop are both under that umbrella and were supposed to be PlayStation exclusives and part of the kind of PlayStation lineup. And now they're bought by Xbox and Microsoft in this acquisition. So there's going to be questions about whether or not that's actually going to be an exclusive anymore, or whether or not that's even going to be on PlayStation at all anymore. So there is literally the gauntlet has been thrown down by Xbox now to counterpunch, and there's immediate backlash now on Twitter as well for Sony to go out and try and buy Rockstar to make sure no kind of GTA or Red Dead Redemption games ever go on an Xbox. I don't think that'll happen, but this is big news. Like, this is massive, certainly is a big swing now at PlayStation, and you know Bethesda are one of the big leading kind of production houses out there. So yeah, big moves, big moves.
Yeah, it definitely is, in terms of like, and people have been screaming at Microsoft for a long time that they got to do something to get more exclusives, because what Sony have done over like the past 10 years is just buy a lot of small studios that make amazing games, and then they just make them Sony or PlayStation exclusives. But this is the first time we've seen a studio like make a major acquisition of a publisher that already make a lot of popular games. And I think that like the interesting thing that comes with this is that like, even though they're buying Bethesda, I don't see all of these games just instantly becoming Xbox exclusives.
I agree,
because there's way too much money involved in these games. Like the Elder Scrolls game, that's gonna make a fortune when it comes out, if it's done right. It's probably gonna be a bit glitchy and whatever for the first while, but if it's done right when it comes out, it's just worth too much money to Microsoft. And even though they're trying to make, like, they're trying to get a studio that are going to make exclusives to make people buy Xbox in the first place, they're also in the business of making money, so they're not gonna like take a massive hit by not releasing a game on PlayStation. Because I think this is kind of, it's a huge move for sure, but it's also kind of like a long-term move, in the sense that like they're hoping
it's
that
totally
these companies
long-term.
Can then make exclusives in the future that will make people want to come back to Xbox and just come to Xbox in the first place. But I think people, like, there is obviously a lot of backlash online. Not backlash, but people worrying that their favorite games are going to be leaving their console. I don't think we're going to see the ramifications of it for another... Because like you said, those games that are coming out next year, there's contracts for them. They're already planned to be PlayStation exclusives. Like you said, maybe they won't be exclusives anymore, but they're definitely just not going to not come out on PlayStation now.
So, exactly.
I don't think people have to worry too much right now, but it's also, even though like I myself, Xbox just isn't the kind of platform for me in terms of the games that they kind of push, like in terms of Halo and whatnot, and any of these games I haven't played myself either. So I'm also, myself, I'm not that worried, because the games that I love are the first person story or third person story action adventure games that are a lot of the games that PlayStation already produce. But like, I get the people that are kind of freaking out about it, but I think you have, don't freak out for a couple of years. You'll see the ramifications in a couple of years. But it also could be exciting, because it does mean that there's more competition between the two, which I don't mean in fanboys like scream at which one is better, but I just mean like literal healthy competition that makes each one of them better. Because like, if PlayStation just continue like completely overriding Xbox for the next couple of years, eventually like you need competition to be getting better. You need to be kept on your toes. So I think it's, while it's a crazy move and it is a huge move, it's almost, even for PlayStation fans, it's kind of like, oh, this is kind of cool. if it doesn't completely go against us and we lose loads of games.
Yeah, like, listen, I think it's a great move. Like, I do agree. I think the two big games out of those kind of franchises that I was scared about losing were Elder Scrolls and Fallout. And to be honest with you, there hasn't been an Elder Scrolls game since Skyrim in 2012. Yeah. And the last Fallout game was one of the biggest messes ever and got Bethesda in a position where they had to sell. So you know, it's not a glowing thing. They're just a legacy studio that have amazing titles. And I do think that if those games release in the future, which, like, let's not kid ourselves, like, it'll be a good four or five years before we see another game from either of those kind of main titles either. So
yeah.
And even when we do, it'll be past the point where people are buying systems to play these games. So I feel like this right now is a really good move because it'll get people to consider buying an Xbox kind of day one by having the idea of them going, well, these are going to be exclusives. Like, say if I want to play an Elder Scrolls games or a Fallout game this generation, I'm going to have to get an Xbox, and people are going to buy that under the assumption and that not to be the case, because there's too much money to be made in it. Like, when this is like the same when Rockstar was exclusive to PlayStation on the PlayStation 2, you know, that type of thing. But as soon as it got to the PlayStation 3, you know, like, basically that license had to go bigger because, you know, like, there's too much money not to go bigger. And I know Sony do that with their own ones, but as you've been pointed out before, it's usually smaller studios that come out with these. Like, you know, Santa Monica Studio, sure, they had God of War, but God of War wasn't the juggernaut it actually was until this PS4 release, when it kind of broke through its own stigma and became such a massive game. Now, I will say that I'd say moving forward, it'll still be an exclusive. But if PlayStation had bought Santa Monica now after the release of that game, I can tell you that the next God of War follow-up would probably be a cross-platform. So, yeah, like I think it's a watch and see, but it's big moves, and, like, this is healthy. Like, you know, as much of a PlayStation fanboy as I am, I'm still happy with this news because it means that Xbox aren't going to give up and it's not going to be a monopoly in the market from just PlayStation. I know Nintendo's there, but I don't really ever count them in this same regard because they are kind of separate. Even though they have great games as well, it's not a direct comparison in the same way this is. And I think we'll always kind of go towards, I think things are going to become more homogenized moving forward, or just more linked up moving forward. I know this is the age of exclusives as well, but I do think eventually things are going to start kind of just popping up across the board, and it might happen this generation, it might not, but I think moving forward it will go that direction.
Yeah. And we'll in particular with online multiplayer games, like, they're all becoming cross-platform. Like,
exactly.
There's almost no point having, not there's no point, but if you want a big successful online multiplayer game, it needs to be cross-platform. Mm-hmm. So everyone can play with everyone and you can make money off everyone, not just people that have your own platform. Anyway, let's move into some movie and TV news, and we'll get through this stuff kind of quickly because we have the two, obviously the PlayStation event and the Emmys we're going to be getting to. But this week we had, or over the last week or so, we had an awful lot of Marvel news dropping, which is just so exciting because we haven't had movie news in so long.
We haven't had Marvel news in so
Marvel long. News in so long. Yeah. Everything was just like pushed back, cancelled, pushed back for so long. So it's nice we're actually getting some positive news and, like, movement. So let's go through. Look, we have three big bits of news in terms of Marvel. We have one, that the WandaVision trailer has finally dropped, and it looks like we are getting that this year before the end of 2020, which is very exciting.
Awesome.
We have Tatiana Maslany has reportedly been cast as She-Hulk, which is awesome. That series really seems to be coming together in terms of writers and everything, which we'll get to, which is great.
Yeah.
And then we've also had Jonathan Majors, who is currently in the HBO series Lovecraft Country. Mm-hmm. He has reportedly been cast as a main villain in the third Ant-Man film, and reports are also saying that villain is going to be Kang the Conqueror, which sounds super exciting.
That's huge.
And much more of a big bit of news, yeah. Out of the three, which one? Go first, pick one.
Which one am I most excited about?
Yeah.
Oh, probably WandaVision, because I saw the trailer and I really liked the trailer. I love how odd it is and weird and, you know, It's exactly what I thought it was going to be. It's that 50s TV aesthetic mixed with kind of horror to a degree. There's parts of it where they do that thing where they're sitting at the table, they're having the dinner, and they're like, where'd you guys meet? And then, you know, she starts to kind of go like, you know, maybe she's been in this construct that she's created, or maybe someone else has created. She's been there for so long, she doesn't know kind of how long she's been there. She maybe hasn't come to terms that Vision is actually dead, or is he, or, you know, there's just a lot of questions. And then the guy gets angrier and angrier, and I'm like, oh, I kind of like this. This is kind of horror-esque as well. And the best thing about it is that they show clips, like they show a part where Vision kind of flies up in the sky where someone gets pushed, you know, through it. And I was like, oh, the CG looks good. It looks movie good, which was my concern. I knew their idea was that there was still going to be movie quality. It's still going to be the big actors, all this sort of stuff. But as soon as you mention anything to TV CGI is good, but it's never that good. And it's always a little bit devoid from kind of movie, but this looks good and it looks movie quality, and I'm actually very excited about this. At the start, yeah. I wasn't as pumped. I know we mentioned Loki and we mentioned Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and I think WandaVision was there, and I was probably less excited about it than the other two. But now that I see this trailer, I'm all on board for this. I'm really excited.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is one, actually, in comparison to you, this is one, like, a weird one that I didn't think I would be excited for, but the minute I heard about it and what they were kind of thinking with it, and the fact that Wanda is then going to be in this Doctor Strange movie they're working on as well, that's kind of almost following on from this story, that's what got me kind of really pumped, because it was like, okay, a lot of these like TV series maybe are going to be just a little bit smaller in scale, which is totally fine and like good for the MCU, but also the fact that this is something that a story will then tie into a movie, and especially in the world of like magic and mysticism and weird powers and like parallel dimensions and universes and stuff, like the whole, even when watching this trailer, it's like, it's hard to figure out, like you'd said, is it Wanda that's doing this, or is someone else in control, or is she like is she unable to control her own powers, like what is it? And that's you said nightmare.
I think it's nightmare. Yeah, the more, like, I know we talked about this before, I think it came up when we talked about Doctor Strange 2 and the fact that this is leading into it and it's about different dimensions, or is it as well? So I think this could be the start of it. I think Wanda could start messing with things or start looking at ways to bring him back, and she comes across Nightmare as well, and this is kind of a product of it. So it's kind of one of those things where it starts out good and it's positive, and then you start to see the cracks behind all of it. I do think Vision's dead, and I think this is probably the last time we'll see Vision, and I think all his kind of activity in this is not really Vision either. It's more of her controlling him, or Nightmare controlling him, or something along those lines. But yeah, like, it's just, it seems dark, and it seems like it's going to end in a dark place, and it's going to lead up to Doctor Strange. And do you know what, like, maybe I've just been dying for Marvel content for the longest period of time, because we haven't seen a Marvel film since the last Spider-Man film, which is over a year ago at this stage, coming up almost in 2 years, year and a half. So yeah, just seeing this and having the possibility of getting something of this quality like before the end of the year is so good, and makes me feel so happy. So who do you think it is? Do you think it's Nightmare, or do you think it's maybe Doctor Strange?
No idea. I don't think it's Doctor Strange. I think it's something to do with Wanda almost not being fit to control her powers, and that's why she's going to be then in Doctor Strange, you know? Like,
do you think we're going to get super, super powerful Wanda as well?
I don't know. Maybe like on the verge of it, which is then why she's in Doctor Strange. Like, maybe she goes full mad by the end of it or something.
Yeah.
I don't know, because also at the same time, when you're watching, like, she kind of looks like she's... obviously she's confused and stuff. There was no glimmer in this of her going kind of villainous, which I don't think I'll see that happening anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really don't know, and I'm almost trying not to look into it too much, because I want to go in just being like, I don't know what the hell's going on. Like I've said many times before, I love movies where you're just trying to figure out what the hell's going on for a lot of it. So this looks like it's right up that alley, which is great. And then obviously another Disney Plus series that we have coming that we thought wasn't going to be till like 2022 or something, but it seems to be moving forward very swiftly, is the She-Hulk series.
Yeah.
So obviously, like I said, Tatiana Maslany just cast as She-Hulk, not confirmed by the studio or anything, but Deadline have said it, and like it's almost definitely confirmed that it is going to be Tatiana Maslany. She's been in Orphan Black, was the kind of major show that kind of brought her through, which I haven't watched myself, but a lot of people have good reviews of it and say that she's amazing in it. So yeah, I'm so pumped for this. And on top of that, the show has got a great team in the background working on it. So they got Kat Kiro, I think is how you pronounce it, but she is directing the pilot for sure, and she's on to executive produce as well. She's directed episodes of All Is Sunny, she's directed episodes of Shameless, so, and then on top of that, Jessica Gao is going to be the head writer, and she's wrote for like Rick and Morty and a few other comedy series. So you can kind of see where they're going in terms of like the team that are working on it. It's going to be a little bit more on the funnier side of things, a little bit more self-referential, and obviously that comes with the character of She-Hulk, because in a lot of the stories she is similar to Deadpool, able to break the fourth wall, but just not to the extent that Deadpool does. But she does talk to the reader and stuff. So I don't know if that's going to happen because I'd be surprised, in particular if they're going to bring in like Mark Ruffalo's Bruce Banner to help out in the story. I'd be surprised if she did break the fourth wall, but I do think they're going to go more of like a comedy route with it.
I think they could totally do fourth wall, but in a creative way. Like, think of Fleabag. Do you know the way where every now and again she looks at the screen and talks to the screen? That type of thing. So this could be a version of, you know, she is very smart. She's a lawyer, all this sort of stuff. But she's been affected by the radiation that causes her to turn into She-Hulk. But it has mental effects as well, to the point where she's convinced she's in a comic when she's not. Like, you know, like that could be the crux of it, is that she is fourth wall breaking, but like, she's also not. She's just unhinged. And they could, you know, they could do a really good version of that where it goes through it, and the whole way through the show, it's kind of fun and she's talking to the camera. And then, you know, maybe she has to recognize, and, you know, basically we all think she's good. And when she meets Bruce, we kind of find out that she is a little bit deranged and she's being affected by kind of the fallout of this. And that's the way they can kind of work around it. So they could do the dark comedy thing of like Fleabag and still continue it. I think it'd work really good. Like, I do hope to keep the four wall part of it, but like, obviously don't break the universe either.
It'll be interesting to see how to do it, because obviously in the comic, the way she actually gets the Hulk, or the way she becomes She-Hulk, is that she is in an accident. And she gets a blood transfusion from Bruce, because he's the only one that could share blood with her for some reason, whatever it is. Comics can write whatever the hell they want, but that's the story of how she got it in the comics, or that's her kind of origin story. So I'm curious to see if it's going to do something similar, or if it's going to be something if they're going to go down a different route, like you said, with gamma radiation as well. But
also Tatiana is class. Like, I know you've not seen Orphan Black. I've only seen bits and pieces of it as well, but I've seen like just look at a couple of clips online where she's acted against herself, and she is incredible. Like,
she plays multiple,
like, that's so hard
herself,
to do.
Right?
She does, yeah. Like, it's basically they all find out they're clones of each other as well. Like, it's actually a very good show. It's quite David Lindelof and sort of, like, you know, it's that mystery box element as well, where you're always trying to figure out why there's another clone, why there's another one, why is there another one. But like, there's in later seasons when they're all kind of together, and there's like a scene where there's like four or five of them and they're just all kind of talking to each other, and it's really good because some of them have different accents and stuff like that, and you do kind of forget after a while that she's like, it's the same person playing against four different people, and that can be so tacky, especially on TV. But she nails it. Like, she's an incredible actress. So like, this would be like it's a really good pick. And you know, it's not like Disney or Marvel as well to get these amazing actors. This just could be another one.
It's interesting that they went with her, because do you remember when the casting call apparently went out for She-Hulk? Apparently they were looking for an Alison Brie type character actress, and Alison Brie was like, I'm here. I'm free. What do you mean? And Alison Brie. I'm Alison Brie. I can do that. So apparently they wanted Alison Brie like, but not Alison Brie herself.
That's mad.
Someone different, which is just so strange.
Has Alison Brie been in a Marvel film? She probably hasn't.
No, she hasn't been in it.
I'm
no.
so surprised, because the Russos always cast the Community card.
Yeah.
Like, is she just not getting a look in? Or have her saved for a cameo later on down the line so she can't do a major role?
Yeah, maybe that's... Yeah, the Russo brothers are like, you can't take someone from Community. We need to use them for 30 seconds somewhere in a future movie.
Plus, she's a really good actress. Like, she's in Glow,
she's
very good in Glow as well. So, like, that's so strange. Like, maybe they do have her earmarked for a bigger role potentially in the future. She could have been a good, Captain Marvel. But, like, listen, I miss Marvel.
Maybe she's just an absolute lunatic behind the scenes and we just haven't heard about it.
I think she is a lunatic, but in a good way. You know, in, like, a really good way. I think
the
all
good
of that
kind of crazy
cast. Exactly, like, the fun crazy. The Kate McKinnon crazy. Just, like, a wild card. You love it.
Yeah, Kate McKinnon kind of annoys me.
Oh, really? I love Kate McKinnon.
Yeah. She's a bit much.
She is much, but... but she's much in the same way that, like, there's lots of actors that are like that, like Adam Devine from Workaholics. She's similar to him, I think, in that I don't know what the person is actually like. But I
to be fair,
a lot of the
SNL crew, kind of, I'm not a big fan of them. It's weird because I like SNL sometimes, but also sometimes when you're watching, you're just like, you're just
the new SNL crowd are just not great, to be honest with you. Like, you know,
yeah, like Pete the
Davidson,
best SNL,
maybe the exception. And
oh, I don't like
McKinnon,
Pete Davidson either. Don't like I don't Pete find Davidson. Him funny at all. Oh,
I think he's funny.
Not at all.
But like, you know, it'll never come up to like the really good ones. Even the year that Andy Samberg done it as well, where he was just incredible. Like, you know,
yeah.
It'll never match those peaks again.
Yeah, anyway. the funniest SNL episodes nowadays are the ones where they have guests on, like a really good guest comes in or something. But when they don't have anyone like good on it, it's like, oh, this is kind of crap. Not that I watch it anyway, but like even from clips on YouTube, like no. Anyway, the last Marvel news that we were talking about was Jonathan Majors getting cast in Ant-Man 3. And again, like there was loads of rumors that Ant-Man 3 wasn't even going to happen. That maybe the third like third film wasn't going to be a film, but was instead going to be a Disney Plus series, because obviously while they're great movies and like we've all enjoyed them, they are among the lower box office successes of the MCU. So people thought like, well, when you're coming out with four movies a year now and you have so many characters you're trying to introduce, maybe don't use an Ant-Man. But it seems like they're going forward with the movie, which is great. Peyton Reed is obviously working on it, most of the cast are coming back, and now we've got Jonathan Majors, who I haven't seen Lovecraft Country yet. I'm so excited to watch it.
I'm waiting till it all comes on, and I'm gonna binge it. So
yeah, yeah. But apparently he's been great in that series, so awesome that he's cast in a Marvel film for one. Awesome as a villain, and if it is going to be Kang the Conqueror, like this is huge news for the MCU.
Massive.
In terms of like
massive
villains going forward, because there's no way they're bringing him in to be a once-off, and if they are, it's a complete waste.
Yeah.
Which, you know, Marvel are like, they've done that once or twice with big villains, but
oh, yeah,
I can't
course.
Picture it with Kang. Like, I'd imagine if it is him, which seems like it is, because again, I think it was Deadline that broke this as well. If it is Kang, it'd be awesome. And like, it kind of makes sense with the time travel, because obviously for anyone that
doesn't
know,
that's the only way
the comics,
I can see it working as well, as the time travel, because where like, I can't see Ant-Man going to space unless he does the whole thing where he, you know, this is a continuation on from like Endgame as well, so he finds Fury out in Sword, and then they bring it in that way. But like, seems like a weird mix. So it seems like Ant-Man, this could be a fun movie of him just getting chased, because like, he's not capable of taking on Kang the Conqueror. So it would be good if he does time travel and he oversteps the bounds and he meets Kang, and the whole movie is not around him trying to fight Kang, it's him trying to get away.
Yeah, so for anyone that doesn't know what Kang the Conqueror is, Kang the Conqueror in the comics is a character who is just known for time travel. Like, that's his thing, is that he just travels through time and takes over civilizations and all that kind of stuff, as he's doing, trying to take over the world, as every good supervillain is. But he is a character who's originally from the future, so he's not someone that figures out how to time travel now. He's more a character that figured out how to time travel in the future and comes back in time for certain reasons throughout stories and blah blah blah, and he always tends to pop up when it comes to a story involving time travel somewhere. So yeah, that's similar to what you were saying. Like, I reckon it's some kind of feedback from Endgame. Now, the fact that this movie isn't going to come out probably, I think they're looking at 2022.
Yeah,
I can't imagine it's going to be like a direct after Endgame type story, but more a case of like, I almost had a thought that like, potentially Kang is someone who like got a future version of Pym particles or something.
Ooh.
Like that, and he's someone from the future that uses like future Pym tech or something like that, which is why he ends up coming into contact with Ant-Man or with the guys with Pym particles in the Ant-Man story. So it'll be curious to see what way to do it, but I think that'd be a really cool way to do a movie, in terms of having like Ant-Man popping through time with the Pym characters or something and being chased by Kang the Conqueror if they're trying to, I don't know, get away with something or whatever. Or potentially it's some, because obviously the first movie is a bit more of a heist movie, maybe they go some version of like a heist thing where, I don't know, he's trying to get something from Kang or vice versa. But that would be,
or simply this
cool.
is a Kang origin story as well, where like Hank goes too far, or not Hank, Ant-Man goes
Scott.
Too far. Yes, Scott Lang goes too far in the future and gets caught, and then his time travel tech gets taken away from him by this guy, and this could be the start of it. Although I wouldn't like that either. I kind of would like him to be established, because he could be a big bad moving forward, or at least alluded to. Like, see, this is a weird one, because he has the potential of being a Thanos level big bad, but I don't want the next phase of films to be Kang the Conqueror either, because I like him as a villain, but like, I kind of want a Galactus or something like that. Like, it's gonna be a weird one. Like, maybe this is a setup for a future one, but because he's named as a major villain, he's gonna have some part in this film, and he's gonna be, it'd just be weird for him to come in and then not play a bigger role moving forward. But like, listen, this is all speculation. Fair play to Peyton Reed. He's the first Marvel director to get his trilogy. The same film. Yeah, exactly. Before James Gunn, or before, well, the Russos got theirs, but you know, we don't count the biggest movies of all time. But
did get their solo character trilogy. They exactly. Got, like, a different version of a trilogy. But yeah, so he'd be the first one to get his actual character through a trilogy of films.
Fair play to him.
But yeah, that's like exciting, and hopefully it comes. I think, like we said, it's meant to be 2022, but like with COVID and with the Black Panther film now, like who knows what way the release schedule is going to be. Like Guardians is meant to be coming out 2022 as well. It's all up in the air, so I'm assuming we're probably going to get like a new slate at some stage, which is just another thing to look forward to.
Fair enough, yeah. It's exciting.
Yeah. Awesome. So let's get into one of the two major topics that we have here. So like we said at up top in the in this episode, I was about to say in the film. I was like, we're not in a film. We are just people behind a microphone. We were talking about how we're both PlayStation 5 gamers, and finally we got the big PS5 event where we got the release date and the costings for the PlayStation 5. So it is coming out in November 12th in the US and a few other select countries, and then November 19th everywhere else. And the pre-orders were a fucking disaster altogether.
Oh my god, don't
which
even
we'll get to in a second. Yeah, the two platforms. So obviously there's one with a disc drive, one that is just digital. The disc drive version $4.99, the digital version $3.99, which are both grand prices. Like these are definitely prices that they're not making money off the console for. These are prices that they want to sell the console so people will be PlayStation gamers, essentially.
Totally. And and unlike the Xbox 2 versions as well that have different price points, the actual specs in these are all the exact same. The only difference is a disc drive. €100 for a Blu-ray disc drive, which is good as well. And then obviously if you have a disc drive, you have a more open market to buy physical games and get them for cheaper as well. But I don't know about yourself, I'm definitely going to get the digital one. Like, it's €100 cheaper. I haven't bought a physical copy of a game in this entire generation, all of PlayStation 4. I haven't bought a physical game.
Seriously?
And, yeah, haven't bought a physical game. Nope. None.
Oh, I
none
was
at all.
Buying, selling games all the time at the beginning. Way cheaper.
I see. I never got into that. Even back when I was younger, I never used to resell my games. I used to always like, I kind of would like the idea. Like, I'd hate to sell something and then not have it there to play. So I used to just keep all of them. And then, so like similar to this as well, I like having a collection. So I buy stuff digitally and keep it on. And plus it's slightly slimmer as well, which aesthetically looks a little bit nicer, even though it is this giant white awful looking thing. But
spaceship in the living room.
And even though that, and then potentially the lack of games on launch, I still tried so hard to get a pre-order and could not get it because
it
was I
listened
to PlayStation and I was ready to pre-order it on the Thursday, but to my amazement, everything was sold out before anything even went live.
Yeah.
So it was absolute joke. Absolute
so basically
joke.
What happened for anyone that didn't see it was they had their big event, which is the online event where they talk about the release dates and blah blah blah, and then they didn't really say originally they said something about pre-orders available
mentioned it. No, a guy who works for PlayStation, I think, in their marketing department, tweeted it out, and then it was retweeted by PlayStation to say that it was coming out on this date.
So like no one knew, but all of a sudden it was sold out everywhere.
Yeah.
So like it was just like everyone flooded when they realized that it was. It's not like there was a time where it's like, hey, on this date in these countries, it's going to be available to pre-order, and like it sold out everywhere in no time. Like
and
even trying
all
to, like,
the retailers
even,
never email or never fed back on the email notifications. Everyone who signed up on it, especially in Ireland, a lot of retailers who have English and European counterparts never got stocked in the first place as well, which made everyone even more angry. That stock was used for the UK and Europe as well, so people in Ireland got especially screwed by this as well.
Shafted altogether.
And I potentially won't have a PlayStation now. Well, I definitely won't have one for launch at this stage. I know they're talking about issuing new ones out, but again, the same problems will be the same problems. I can't see the Irish market even getting additional ones. So it'll probably be 2021 before I get my hands on PlayStation.
If I don't have a PS5 at Christmas, I'm going to be so pissed off.
I don't think I'll have it at Christmas, but the thing I've heard about is that Horizon Zero Dawn and Miles Morales Spider-Man are both available on PlayStation 4, and I might just play them there.
way. That's a waste.
I'd rather not. I'd rather not, but it looks like I might have to. So
even for this podcast, I'm not doing that. Just a heads up. I'm too much of a weirdo about quality when you can have quality on a game. But yeah, like Sony just completely fucking dropped the ball altogether. Couldn't have dropped it anymore. And it's even, I honestly don't understand. Like, I get the whole thing of like, it makes people more hungry when you don't have enough product and they want more and they want more and people are interested in whatever the reasonings behind it is. Mm-hmm. If you know you're going to have millions and millions of people that want to buy your console, like, I know there's only a certain amount of factories. I know there's only a certain amount you can build. But holy God, the fact that you sold it so quickly is just insane to me.
It's because ludicrous.
it's just losing money. it's not even a case of like there's a couple of people that didn't get one. There are hundreds of thousands of people that didn't get one. Like it's insane, and it's legitimately going to drive people to the Xbox.
Yeah, you totally run the risk of people like wait now. Like, so say if I got the pre-order there on Thursday and this news broke about Bethesda and I was really hard on getting the Bethesda game, you know, I have my pre-order, so like I'm getting a PlayStation now. Whereas say if I was someone who's like, well, I want to play the next Fallout and I want to play the next Elder Scrolls, even though they'll probably be not exclusive, but at the same time, even if I had that fear, I'm like, well, I might get an Xbox now because specs are very similar across the board except for the loading times, which is still way superior on PlayStation. But like, you know, for the sake of it, this could cost them sales in the long run. And you know, they massively dropped the ball here, and they're talking about bringing out an additional 4 million consoles, but even then that would be more than they brought out for the launch of the PS4 in the middle of a pandemic when they don't have the facilities to actually make this either. So like they're making promises they can't keep, and it's so clumsy for like the launch of the console to do this really big announcement to bring everything out and then to just drop the ball like an hour or two later is just mind-blowing. Like it's incredible. I'm still gonna get one, and like it's kind of one of those ones where like I'm more disappointed than I am mad.
So, that's way like, worse too.
Yeah, exactly. Like they should know better, and it's just disappointing that they don't. But anyway, there's some good things to look at here as well. There's good games. Is there any games excite you?
So obviously they showed, so we'll go through a couple of them. The big one, not even the big one, we'll get to the huge announcement, but the big thing that was their kind of showcasing was Spider-Man Miles Morales. They showed a bit, I don't know, was it like an 8 or 9 minute gameplay?
A little bit of a story trailer as well at the start. Yeah. Like him walking through Harlem, looked beautiful, looked really good actually.
It looked amazing. It really, really did. And gameplay, very similar to the Spider-Man gameplay, but obviously specs are higher, but obviously as well, Miles Morales has his own unique powers, so it makes the actual gameplay, it's kind of like watching it and being like, oh, I know how to do everything he's doing, but he's clearly got more powers and a different power set than Peter Parker in the original Spider-Man game. So yeah, I really can't. And it was such an amazing set piece in terms of like the whole bridge sequence they had.
Awesome.
I don't know if it was the Brooklyn Bridge, whichever bridge it was in New York that it was set on, of it coming apart and everything. And those are kind of one of those things similar to like the actual Spider-Man Homecoming film where Peter Parker splits the bridge apart.
Yeah.
It's like when you're trying to help, if you make things worse, like is it worth being there in the first place? Like, because that's a huge disaster that he caused.
Yeah,
so I'm curious
massive.
Of what the fallout's going to be in the storyline in the game, because it's not going to be a case of like you just like destroyed an entire bridge, a huge bridge that loads of people depend on, and people are going to be like, oh, he saved the day. Like, it's definitely going to take a turn after this sequence. So I'm assuming this sequence is set relatively early in the story. And then that kind of feeds into maybe like people in the city turning on like Miles' version of Spider-Man or whatnot. So
exactly, yeah, because we don't, like, did we fully figure out why Peter's not there? Is he gone? Did he leave or something like that for holidays or something like that?
There's something about that he's not around at the time, because it's obviously set over Christmas and in winter, so maybe he's away on like, I don't know, a trip or something. He left the city in Miles's hands. Who knows?
Yeah, so like, yeah, it'll just be super interesting to see how that goes story wise. But yeah, the gameplay looks awesome. Like the little abilities of him, like shocking, like that whole visual looks amazing. The stealth aspects as well of him going invisible look awesome. So like
I
was totally pumped for this game, and I'm even more pumped now as well. So it's the Trickster, isn't it, who's the
Trickster,
main villain for this. Yeah, so yeah, it's just gonna be
so
great
so far.
They
released some I don't know if they had, did they have a trailer on Final Fantasy 16?
They have 16, yeah. They have they have a kind of a story trailer at the moment as well. Like, again, all these Final Fantasy games, it's kind of impossible to figure out what they're doing, because they're all like, they're basically like an anthology. It's like a different story every single time. There is kind of like loose things to like the world, the money's always called Gil. There's always some aspect of summonings as well, which seems to be a big part of this, where they had those two kind of big behemoths that were summoned. Like, those aspects are always kind of present, but like the story is always different. There's always a kingdom, there's always something. But the thing about this one, in comparison to Final Fantasy 15, which had the kind of outdoor and the car, and it was a little bit more modern day, this one looks way more feudal. It looks like your old kingdoms, your kind of, yeah, like your Knights of the Realm and that type of thing. And it looks, here, like, it looks really fun. I've really only got into Final Fantasy since Final Fantasy 15, really. Like, I played the remake of 7, and I played some of 13 beforehand. So, like, yeah, like it looked good and it looks fun, but I don't know too much about it. And, like, Square Enix can be so hit and miss, so like, I hope it's good. And like, yeah. I feel like this is so far off being done. Like, yeah, you know, yeah, like this is just like, hey, this will come out at some stage on the PS5, but like, I'd say we'll be waiting at least another 3 years.
Maybe not 3 years, but they even said that like they're not going to have another big reveal on it until 2021. So yeah, it's definitely not next year. It's at least 2022, if not further.
I think
how excited are you, Lorcan? How excited are you about being a wizard?
I am actually massively excited by this. It's totally my fantasy.
About the game there.
So so this is basically the new Hogwarts games that's coming out at the moment. It's like the new, I suppose, the updated version of a Harry Potter series as well. Those Hogwarts amazing games. Hogwarts Legacy. But yeah, it's set in the 1800s. It's kind of taken a different look at this universe. Again, a thing that people might be very happy to know is that J.K. Rowling has no part to play in the story.
They made that clear afterwards.
And taking aside all the controversy with her at the moment as well, just the fact that I feel like she's George Lucas, her own franchise, and she probably shouldn't be in charge of it anymore as well. And it's such a really good world and such an unbelievable place to play in, that I'm glad I get to see another person's take on it, even if it is different. And it's so far removed. It's not like the Star Wars thing where it's just set a couple of years afterwards using similar characters. This is so far before anything happens that it's a completely different world, different struggles, no mentions of, you know, the Death Eaters or Voldemort or anything along those lines. No Dumbledores, no nothing. So, like, this will be super fun and super creative. And the thing, like, that's just story-wise. The actual visuals for this look incredible. Like, you know, this is early days Hogwarts. You still have aspects that are there the whole way through it, like the moving staircases, the layout. You have Hogsmeade there as well. There's the outside areas that can be explored. Like, I loved these Harry Potter games when I was growing up, even though they were pretty awful looking, at the graphics back now. And so dated, and then they turned into basically third person shooters before they finished, where it was just wands that acted like guns basically, and you kind of ran through trenches and stuff. So like, they kind of really fucked up franchise up towards the end. But we've been waiting for like a Harry Potter or a Hogwarts themed game for a long time, and obviously this leaked like last year, I think it was, and it got everyone hyped, and then they just pretended that it didn't exist and never acknowledged it until now, to be like, whoa, look at this game, this is new. Well, it was like, we knew this was coming.
They were clearly like way further back in development, so they had no plans on talking about it, which is why they didn't. But it looks great. Like, so it's an open world RPG game, so there is a full story in it, but it's like you create the character essentially. Yes. So it's not like you're not playing Harry Potter or anything like that, so it's kind of cool in that sense. Like you said, because it's in the 1800s, it's got nothing to do with any of the movies in terms of like story plot, so you can kind of go in and just kind of create your own story and create your own character and be part of the world, which is cool. And it's class that it looks like you're going to just be a student and learn all this stuff. And it's a great game mechanic in terms of teaching you how to play game is by doing it through classes and stuff, because this is one of the things, and we talked about this a long time ago when that footage leaked, where if they'd done like a version of a bully game, which is like the Rockstar game that we all loved, or Kansas Candidate, whatever the hell it was called over here in Europe. But that bully game was great because it's the whole thing of you going and you're taking some classes, but then you can also go out in the evenings and do some like ridiculous kind of crap around the town. And
but there's a curfew to try and get back. Yeah, and if you don't make there's like issues that happen. Yeah, it's just
there's so much cool things you can do. And obviously in this they have like they show the student kind of taking classes, brewing potions, learning magic and stuff in the classroom, and then going out and you're like fighting dragons in some scenes. You're like exploring the Forbidden Forest, like you said, Hogsmeade Village is available. You're having magic duels with other people in some scenes. Like, so yeah, it looks like exactly what, if you were to, like we talked about a while back, if this game is what it looks like it is, then it's going to be great. So yeah, can't wait for that.
Yeah, and then just this universe, like I know I just touched on it there as well, but like just a different perspective on this amazing universe will kind of, like, I'm kind of hoping that this does well and it has ramifications for the film part of it as well, because there's too much happening around the time of Harry Potter. Just break the mold and, you know, tell a different story in a different time period. And
yeah, it's the same issue Star Wars had for a long time.
Exact same, yeah. Just do something different. So hopefully this works.
Yeah. They also are doing a Demon's Souls remix. So obviously the Souls games are games that a lot of people love. Did you ever play them?
No, they're too hard for me, Keith.
Yeah.
I tried to play Bloodborne and I played about an hour of it and it was just kicking my ass. I'm like, this is the first hour. And I was I just can't do this. Like, I don't have the time or patience. So, you know what? It looks good. I'm so happy these people are getting their remake, but like, no, I don't care.
And then finally, the big reveal. The big reveal that when I seen that trailer, when I was writing the notes here, for anyone that can't see the notes that I'm reading off,
it's not even a trailer. The music comes in and everything picks up, and then the logo comes up, and then they don't even say God of War, just say Ragnarok is coming, and it's like the balls of these guys. Like, people, of course, just know what it is without them even having to spell it out. Just Santa Monica are just big dick energy, man. Like, that's all it is.
That's
big
exactly
dick
what
energy.
It is.
Because, like, all these guys had these amazing game pictures. Fucking Square Enix pull out this, like, massive, like, video thing for, like, Final Fantasy. Miles Morales has, like, a story beat and, like, a player beat. Mm. And all people can talk about is this fucking logo flashing on screen. And it's the biggest takeaway is God of fucking War.
Oh, yeah. And even, like, so excited for it. On the notes, all I've wrote is God of War Ragnarok, holy fucking shitballs, yes, yes, and more yes. So that's really all I gotta say. Like, I cannot wait for it. The fact that there was no teaser, no footage, but they did say that it's due out in 2021, so it's not gonna be one of those things where we're hearing about it for like 3 years or anything. Like, it's due to come out more than likely holiday season next year. I'd say
like September.
And I just cannot wait to play as Kratos fighting Thor, because you know it's coming. Like, he's going to be the big bad, I think, and then potentially Odin comes in the third film or the third game. But
I see, like, you see Odin in here, but you also see his son. Well, actually,
yeah,
do you know what? I won't
face?
Spoil it just in case no one's played it. But his boy, I guess you see his development in this as well, and how that's going to turn. So I reckon this is going to be your kind of Empire Strikes Back type of moment, where I feel like this is going to end on a fever pitch. I just have a feeling. Yeah, Thor will probably be the main bad guy in this, but it'll be alluded to Odin. You might even see Odin, and then obviously stuff is going to happen with Atreus, probably with Odin as well, and then that's going to bring about a couple of things, because like, this is called Ragnarok. I wonder if we're going to see Surtur, because you go to his realm and you see the sword and stuff like that. So I wonder, is Surtur going to be in this? Because, like, you know, God of War love to do your giant fights. Like, it'd be amazing fighting this giant flaming god with a sword.
That's true. So, oh my god, that sounds amazing.
And then you have was it Orengar, the snake, or the world eater as well. Obviously that has ties to Ragnarok as well, where this is going to be, I'm so pumped. I'm so ridiculously pumped for this game.
I really cannot wait. And even like what you just said about them having like big dick energy in
it,
like the releasing of it in the first game, like even just thinking about playing it through, they talk so much about Odin and like about his lore and about Thor. They had a statue of Thor in there. Like, they built up so much of this world without actually showing any of the people. Like, they totally held back on so much of it. So now, thinking forward about it, it's like the fact that they took this Norse mythology and had the audacity to hold so much of it back for future games, when you're releasing this game that, like, a lot of people nowadays are like, oh, we have this game, fucking throw everything at it, we gotta throw everything to make sure people like it and make it huge and put everything in the game, whereas this, it was like, Like, they did that, and they made an amazing game, but they also held so much back for future games that just
They created one of the greatest games of all time. Like, you know, and, like, there's a very good documentary on it as well. I think it's called Rising Kratos as well. If people haven't seen it, just check it out. Like, again, it is pure big dick energy. Like, it really is. And, like, no, but it's the epitome of what it is. Like, the guys were like, hey, this hack and slash childish game that everyone loves, let's just make it super grounded and let's make it Last of Us 2, but let's set it somewhere else, you know, all this sort of stuff, and then let's make people wait almost half the game before they get he gets his iconic weapons, and let's you know, it was just done so well. It's just the epitome of an amazing video game, and I've all the confidence in the world that these guys are going to knock it out of the park with the second one, because they have bigger things to play with. They have an established world to play with, and you know, these guys don't really fall away from challenges, so this is going to be huge. Yeah, and like, I'm so happy we're not going to wait for, you know, this isn't going to be your Elder Scrolls where, you know, something similar, we just saw a logo and some backgrounds, but I know I'm not going to see an Elder Scrolls game for about 4 or 5 years, whereas this could be, you know, this time next year I could be buying this game. So anyway,
absolutely awesome. And then the only final thing we're going to just to cover, and I don't really need to go into this much, but a cool thing that they have said is that if you are a PS Plus subscriber, which 90% of people that have a PlayStation are, if in particular if you play online games in any fashion at all, you kind of need it. So if you, when you buy a PlayStation 5, if you are a PS Plus subscriber, once you log in there, you have access to basically a huge library of like classic PS4 games that have come out over the last couple of years for free. So God of War, Bloodborne, Days Gone, The Last of Us Remastered, Arkham Knight, Detroit Become Human, Uncharted 4, Until Dawn, like some of my favorite games on the PS4 are all going to be in
Persona 5. Woo!
What a poo poo game.
Gotta play Persona 5.
I'm just kidding, I know.
Gotta play Persona 5.
I'll never play it. but you won't. That's pretty cool. I won't. That's pretty cool though, that like it's kind of a nice little thing for fans of these games, just to be like, once you log on, they're there. Because I'm sure like after like a month or two, they won't be available for free, and then you have to pay for remastered versions and whatnot. Yeah. But it's a nice little thing where, you know, especially for those people that got the fucking pre-orders on time, they can get them. The rest of us, they might not even be available by the time we get a PS5.
Maybe not. But like, listen, like it's probably good for anyone who's maybe jumping consoles, you know, like who didn't have a PS4, never got to play Uncharted, never got to play, you know, and well, the Batman games were cross-platform as well, but any of those games that were exclusives, you know,
good
they can
Lord,
jump on
could
and
you
play
imagine
it.
That could you imagine coming over and
Uncharted 4,
God of War,
Uncharted,
Last of Us for the first time. Good Lord, anyone that hasn't played those games, just have yourself a good old weekend. Or no, have yourself a good old year, because it'll take you ages to play them all. But it's totally worth it. They'd be so good. Anyway, let's move on. We can finish up the show with the Emmys. Lorcan. We love awards shows, don't we?
Yeah,
I
sat down and watched Jimmy Kimmel, you know, cracking loads of jokes to no audience members. He's a very funny guy, isn't he, that Kimmel? Isn't he beloved everywhere? I really don't like Kimmel. I don't like any of those. I don't like any of those talk show hosts. I don't like Kimmel. Don't like Fallon.
Oh, John Oliver's great.
Do you know what? I think he's the best out of the bunch. Like he is the best out of the bunch, and he does things. But the thing about John Oliver is I used to love his format of, you know, picking a topic and having a go at it. But it's his delivery of what the writers do. It's so samey, and it gets it, like once someone points out what the tropes are, it's very hard to listen to him, because like it's a serious story, and I love that he does it. And like, to be honest with you, I think he's doing a service that more people need to do, where he takes this giant complicated issue that people need to know more and he simplifies it and turns it into a comedy sketch so people will listen to it, so people come out of it being way more informed than they were before. But I will say that his comedy, it just, anyway, listen, we're not here to talk about the TV show host. James Corden's the worst though.
James Corden's totally the worst. He fucking sucks.
He's the worst.
He sucks so much.
But anyway, the Emmys.
I was even joking about it there. I legitimately do like award season, because it's cool to see like all your favorite shows kind of up there, and which ones
or shows
for.
Or shows that are potentially on your list, and you're like, well, I have to get around to that. One
exactly,
of those,
yeah,
well,
it's a
three
good
or four
one.
Of those came from this, where I'm like, well, shit, that won Emmys this year, so maybe I should make the time to actually watch it. So.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good way of almost like looking at like what you haven't watched for the year and getting to that once it's nominated here. So the Emmys have their three main sections. So they cover all of TV, like we had said, but they have their three main sections when it comes to the Emmys. So they have drama, they have comedy, and they have limited series. So we'll kick off with drama first. So obviously, like the Oscars, they have their same thing, leading male, leading female, supporting, whatever. But one show that I had just started watching in the last couple of weeks, which is Succession, and oh good lord, it's such a good show. I can't scream it from the rooftops enough, but it won outstanding drama series, which is just class, because it was going up against like Better Call Saul. I still haven't got around to Better Call Saul, but it's nominated every single year.
And the amount of people who I respect just talk about how great this show is, and I haven't watched it. And it's done by one of like my favorite, what do you call it, story writers of all time, behind one of my favorite shows of all time. Why haven't I watched the show? But I will. I definitely will. I think it's just at this stage there's nearly 5 or 6 seasons of it. So like,
it's going, it's a bit daunting. Yeah, 5 seasons now. Yeah, to be honest, I tried watching season 1 and I didn't like it. But it's been up for awards since like season 2, so I'm gonna actually just jump straight into season 3 and just go from there, because like, we know the world, so I don't think it's gonna be that hard to get into it. But yeah, Succession 1, like I said, it was up against Killing Eve, amazing, The Crown, amazing, Handmaid's Tale, amazing, The Mandalorian, which got nominated, which is awesome for outstanding drama, Ozark, Stranger Things, and Better Call Saul, like all class shows, and Succession still come out on top. So anyone that's not watching Succession, like, you really gotta get on that. And not only that, but also Jeremy Strong, who's the lead from that, won the Outstanding Drama Series lead actor, and he, for Kendall Roy, he is kick-ass in season 2. Like, he is just so good in it. So,
how many seasons is there of
there's just two, the and there's so 8 or 10 episodes, and they're about 45 minutes to an hour each. Awesome. But they're honestly so good, and even though it's a heavy show, it's also very easy to binge. Like, we got through it super quickly. Nice. So that's class. The supporting actress, or the lead actress, where am I going now? No, supporting actress. So, do you watch Ozark?
It's one of those shows that I watched the very first episode, liked the first episode, and just never went back. So, like, again, it's definitely a show that I want to get into as well. It's won loads of awards. I feel like a bit of it's been spoiled for me before, so it's kind of hard for me to go back into it. But short answer, no, I haven't watched it.
Well, Julia Garner from Ozark, she won supporting actress. Supporting actor, another show that I just started watching and absolutely love, surprisingly, is The Morning Show on Apple TV, whatever the hell it's called, Apple TV Plus, whatever it's called. But Billy Kudrup plays, he's like a studio head in it, and he's just class. Like, he's one of those guys where like, you're a terrible person, but for some reason I can't stop watching you. You know that kind of person? But yeah, he won it for supporting actor, and there was like two guys from The Morning Show were there, two from Succession as well, and then Giancarlo Esposito from Better Call Saul, and a few others are in there. But again, he's class, so I'd highly recommend. Have you watched The Morning Show? You haven't, right?
No, the only one that I've watched from the drama and that's going to be covered by this is Euphoria. I couldn't think of the name of it as well. It's the only one that I've seen out of all these. I've watched parts of it. I've watched the first 3 episodes of Euphoria, and we're going to watch the rest of it soon as well. But it's really good. Like, again, sorry, I've just skipped on here as well. But obviously, Zendaya has won. Was it Best Supporting Actress, was it?
No, Best Lead.
Best Lead Actress as well. Yeah, because I would say she's not a supporting character in this. But like, it is an ensemble, but like, she's very much the lead over the course of it. She she made history as well. She's the youngest, and she's also, I think, only the second black actress or something like that as well that's won the major award. So like, again, this show is incredible. It's HBO. It's a coming of age drama, but done for HBO, so it's dark and twisted and messed up, and they can really go there with a lot of different things, like, you know, talking about gender identity, politics, drug abuse, sex abuse, all this sort of stuff, and they really go there. And it's kind of one of your, like, the way I put it down is, if you watch the trailer, it's like Riverdale with your, you know, glorified sort of drama, but real life, but also even heightened again to being like, well, everything is just completely fucked up for everyone. It's really interesting, and it's the same with yourself. It's a heavy show to watch, but it's very bingeable, because it ends on kind of cliffhangers by which you kind of go like, well, what's going to happen to this character and this character? And Zendaya is incredible in it. Again, from like, again, she's from the Disney mold, isn't she? Like, she's from, like, Disney shows, and she's done a good thing where she's broken out of it. And while some people go and they're like, oh, I'm going to do this R-rated thing, she seems like she's gone, you know, the artistic, we'll say, right, as well, where she's like, you know, I'm a good actress, and she's really kind of taken to it, and she's incredible in this. And, you know, it's definitely a role that people wouldn't see for an ex-Disney star, especially since, you know, the only thing she's done since then really as well is Spider-Man. So, you know, she still has that cookie cutter cleanness on her, but with this show it's grimy and it's great. But yeah, like, I definitely recommend it.
Yeah, she's going to be in the upcoming Dune film as well. She's going to be huge.
Yeah, she looks great.
She's
going to be so, I think so as well. She's an incredible actress. Like,
she's
so
awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, she'll be fine.
that's a huge win for her. But in terms of, like, it's so cool looking at the drama series, because in a shocking turn of events this year, I've actually watched most of them.
Do you know what? I've watched about half of them, but all the half I watched never got nominated. And I knew Succession was going to clean up, but it's one of those shows I just haven't watched at the moment. I'm surprised with the morning show, but, like, maybe if I watch the show, I won't be as surprised with that.
It's so good. I was not expecting it to be good, but it's such a great series. It really is. Surprising, none of I think Netflix were going into this with 160 nominations. Yeah. Like, they had the most of anyone, and they still done well, but, like, The Crown didn't get half as many wins as it did last year. I don't think this season was as good as the season before. It's obviously still an amazing show.
I definitely enjoyed it. I thought it was great. It's just potentially with the new cast and stuff like that, people didn't particularly like it, but I thought it was great. I really enjoyed it. So
and what other show? Westworld had a lot of nominations in this category.
It was a bit of a letdown this season in comparison to other seasons. There's a show I'm watching at the moment as well, which, again, I think it was an American show, it would have done better, which is Dark as well, because it literally finished up and it's incredible. But again, a German speaking show, it never gets the love at the Emmys, really. So there's some amazing shows, and they're all Netflix as well. Like, Stranger Things got a nod, but, like, Stranger Things, even, like, the last season wasn't particularly great either. The Crown was probably their big flagship, and it just wasn't that great. So yeah, it's just maybe not a great year for Netflix for TV shows.
And then, so let's jump into the comedy carrot, or the comedy route, or should we just call it the Schitt's Creek sweep?
I am so happy about
this.
So
happy.
Because, like, again, it's one of the best shows I think I've ever seen, especially in a comedy show. I think it's so fresh, so great. Have you seen the documentary that it ended? So Fresh,
is
So
that
Great.
Like an ad for, like, a drink or something.
but it is. It's fresh. Like, it's just a good concept, and, like, they nail it. And it's that wholesome vibe from, like, Modern Family, but, like, that sort of weird everyone's out for themselves kind of awfulness of Always Sunny, but just always kind of mixed in a good wholesome feel. You know what I mean? Like, it just, and it's acted so well. Like, have you seen the documentary when the show finished?
Yeah.
Oh, like if that doesn't bring a tear to your eye, where it just talks about, like, Dan Levy, and, like, he batted 1,000. Like, you know, this is his first major thing. Like, he worked in, what, MTV doing hosting jobs before this, and then you know, like, he definitely comes from a place of privilege, where his dad being Eugene Levy, you know, the connections they had. But, like, that doesn't take away from the fact that this dude is super fucking talented, and this show is incredible. And I've never been happier that all the characters got listed, got nominated, and all of them won. So, like, I could not be happier. Like,
it's so amazing,
well deserved.
Like, I don't think I've ever seen that happen before. I must check if it ever has happened before. But, like, so it won the overall outstanding comedy. Annie Murphy won for supporting actress.
Yeah.
Dan Levy himself won for supporting actor. Eugene Levy won for lead actor, and Catherine O'Hara won for lead actress. But then on top of that, for writing, they won the writing one. For directing, they won the directing one. Like, it's
the
one
costume as well, I think.
They won a lot of ones behind the ones that I think they had, like, a technical Emmys, like, a year or a day or two beforehand, and they won costume on that and stuff as well. So they almost, like, in terms of tonight, I think they won every one that they were nominated in, which is just amazing. Like, a clean sweep of everything in terms of, especially in terms of comedy, because there's so much good comedy right now.
Their category was, like, you know, Fleabag was in there, and the Marvelous Miss Maisel, which is a show that I harp on about constantly as well, was in there with them. Like, you know,
Fleabag this year.
Oh, there was no Fleabag, sorry, it was just Marvelous Miss Maisel as well. But, like, their competition was massive, and, like, they just nailed it. Like, they're incredible. But, like, I didn't see another winner. Like, you know, like, all those categories, I probably would have wished for them to win it. But like, the more I looked at it, like, they definitely deserved everyone they got. Like, you know, this isn't a case where like, oh, they finished their show, so give them a shout out. This is no, they massively deserved it, and they probably weren't appreciated as much as they were up until their last two seasons, because I certainly only started watching the show in the last season. So like, you know, there's, it's just, it's so good, and I could not be happier. And I like, I can't help but to think, do you think this is like a gilded cage or a cursed chalice as well for Dan Levy, because it's going to be so hard to break away from? Like, this was so good that what's his next thing? You know, are people always going to be judging it to how good this was, and will he ever get it under a fair shake? I suppose it's a great privilege
I'm sure
position
will,
to be in, but
that's kind of similar to like, if you look at like Eugene Levy after an American Pie, like anyone seeing him in anything else would have been like, oh, he's the dad from American Pie, he can't be in anything. Like,
well,
sure, it
was,
took him years to get
he
to
was
other
that
stuff.
until this basically as well, so
But yeah, no, that's like, couldn't be happier with that. And there's no show out there that deserved it more than Schitt's Creek as well. It was such a good show and such a feel-good show. So ludicrous stuff altogether. Good for them. And then the last kind of main categories that they have is limited series. And obviously kind of Watchmen was the big winner from this. So Watchmen won the outstanding limited series overall, which that's against stuff like Unorthodox, Unbelievable, Miss America, and Little Fire as Ever. I actually haven't heard of that series. But big win for them. But not only that, they won the supporting actor in Yahya Abdul-Mateen, who obviously was playing Dr. Manhattan in the film.
He was
great. In the series. Who else did we have? Damon Lindelof won it for writing. And Regina King also won for lead actress in a limited series. So it really was the big winner in terms of limited series. It kind of took the cake with everything. So it did.
Well, again, similar to Schitt's Creek, it was just the best quality show there, like, you know, that came out of it. Like, I know we talked about Normal People and how great Normal People was, but like, you know, The Watchmen, like, there's one episode in specifically, which is the Tulsa one.
A god
one
walks
the,
into a bar or something, was it?
No, it's the one with the black riots in, I think it's Tulsa or Tulsa or something like that. It's Tulsa as well. So it talks about it, and it's the origin story basically of Hooded Justice, and just, oh my god, it's incredible. It's just shot so incredible, where I was just like, this show is ridiculous. Like, it's so good. And A God Walks Into a Bar again is incredible as well. And like, I kind of forgot how good the show was until I started thinking about it just there. I think the last episode I didn't particularly love. I think it ended a bit weirdly for my liking. But everything else was amazing. So yeah, listen.
Yeah.
Totally deserved.
Yep. And then Mark Ruffalo won lead actor for a series called I Know This Much Is True. I don't know if that was a movie or.
I thought it was a movie as well. I thought it was a bit like Your Bad Education. You know, it was a.
Yeah, and that's who he was
TV
going
movie.
Up against. He was actually going up against Hugh Hefner. Or Hugh Hefner.
Jesus.
Hugh Hefner back in the game. No, going up against Hugh Jackman for Bad Education. And also our own Paul Mescal for Normal People. Yeah. So. Class to see him nominated and up against such huge competition, and just in the game for.
There was a great photo during the rounds as well, where he was doing like a Zoom call with his family afterwards, and his mother done like an L shape in her forehead because he lost. And I just thought that was great, like, you know, very much Irish mentality, bring him back down to earth, you know what I mean? It's like, come back down to us now. But listen, Paul Mescal's a superstar, like he'll be fine.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Did you see he was trending because when it cut to him at one point, it was him and he just has like a plant beside him, and everyone was like freaking out because, oh, look at Paul and his plant.
Oh my, like
people
the guy
just love him.
The guy, the guy has like basically all the American girls are just like, have you heard like the fallout stories now from Normal People, where I think it was Arts and Humanities and Trinities went up by
jumped.
70 or 80 points as well, because so many people from the US want to go to Trinity and have their own Normal People experience and meet their own Connell. You know, like he's just become this new icon, I suppose, as well, for just for that generation of like, I don't even want to say teenage girls, because they're obviously college age girls who are going over, but like, yeah, like he's a golden boy at the minute, and he's definitely going to rock that for the next maybe year or two going into Hollywood. So I hope he makes the most of his big break. And like, listen, this is going to be the first time or the last time we're going to see him kind of at awards, because he definitely is a pretty boy, but he's a good actor, like a really good actor, so he'll be fine.
Good on it for the Irish, good on him. And yeah, they are most of the awards that kind of came out of the Emmys. The Mandalorian, which was nominated for the lead dramatic series, which is just class to see, because
it's good to just be nominated.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's a win in itself for them being, because none of us would have been like, oh, the Mandalorian's going to be nominated for it. So,
well, it should have been for music. Like, it definitely, like, me and it you won talk for about music. It's just the music. It's one
for
so
score.
Good.
So what's his name? Ludwig. Göransson. He won for musical composition. But they had, like I was saying, they had a, I don't know if it was the week before, but they had like one or two different versions of the Emmys leading up to it, which is usually all the kind of behind the scenes, like the sound editing and the mixing and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And Mandalorian, I think it took home like 6 or 7 awards in it, which is amazing. So it had cinematography, production design, sound mixing, sound editing, special effects. And again, all, if you watch the behind the scenes stuff on the Mandalorian, on Disney Plus, it's kind of like a making of, it's like 8 episodes. But totally deserved, because in terms of production and everything, the way that they filmed this and shot this is totally revolutionary. And it's changed the game in terms of what you can do on TV with special effects and stuff. Yeah. And it's like totally deserved for it. And would it even be a Star Wars thing if it wasn't nominated for sound editing and sound mixing? Like, every Oscars, every year that a Star Wars film comes out, it's definitely going to be in sound editing, and it's definitely going to be in sound mixing, and it's probably going to win, like, all the time.
Yeah, well, they normally have John Williams on there as well, so, like, it kind of goes with it, just what I'd say. But, like, when your technical awards, like, you know, no matter what, no one can take away your Oscar-nominated or Oscar-winning, and then people will be like, well, you know, it's the Suicide Squad one where it's like Oscar winning Suicide Squad. Yeah. What's the Oscar for it? Don't ask. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
It just could be down there as well. But like, yeah, like, fair play. And I'm like, as you mentioned before, like, I think the technical breakthroughs of their whole shooting arrangement with that kind of like 360 or whatever 180 TV setup, I think is the future of filmmaking. So like, they definitely should get kind of technical awards for pioneering something incredible. So yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Deserved.
Unreal. Well, that brings us to the end of the show, I think.
Nice ribbon. I can go outside. Oh, I can't go outside anymore, Keith, because of the coronavirus.
We're not starting the show and ending the show on the fucking coronavirus.
I wrote it down afterwards. It was like, end on the coronavirus. It'll be the end of us all. We have 3 more weeks of this as well, because we're only in our first couple of days of lockdown. Technically, today is our first day of lockdown. And do you know why I'm so agitated and so mad? I wasn't going to go to the pub. The bars are open everywhere else. So basically, while everyone else gets treated for good behavior and have the bars open, not only do we not have the bars open, but they've taken away the food inside with the bars that we already had open. So we've no chance of it anymore. I was supposed to go for a lovely dinner at the weekend. I can't do that anymore.
Oh, no. Unless I want to sit outside.
It was going to be a lovely dinner, and I was going to have a pint with it, and it was going to be great. But I can't do that anymore, Keith, because people want to have
this weekend. You could have sat outside.
Yeah, whatever. don't take my misery away from me, Keith.
I'm Irish. I want to complain about things. That's what I do.
I want
best.
My misery.
Anyway. All right. Well, let's end on that miserable note then. What a great way to finish the show, Lorcan. Thanks.
Wash your hands, guys. Wash your hands.
Yeah. Wash your hands. Especially if you're in Dublin. If you're in Dublin, fucking stay inside and wash your hands and wear a mask.
And maybe have
sake.
Like less drug fueled parties as well. That'd be cool.
That'd be great.
Yeah,
that'd be
I'd love that. Yeah.
We'd all appreciate that.
Awesome, guys.
Anyway, we'll see you next week, guys.
All right, see you, guys.
Subscribe and all that fun stuff. You know yourself.
You know yourself.